Hey everybody, and welcome to the Jump Ball Podcast. Our guest today was Jonathan Sharks from The Ringer. We got into whether the Clippers can maintain this hot start, what's going on with the Golden State Warriors, which NBA team should tank, and are the Los Angeles Lakers this year's Portland Trailblazers? We also talked a little college basketball, so let's go tip it off. How you doing today, Jonathan?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. Happy Thanksgiving. I really appreciate you jumping on here just before Big Turkey Day.
Yeah, I'm ready to get offline for a while, watch some football. I haven't really got to watch football this year anymore. So much basketball watching. So I'm going to have to watch my Cowboys keep rolling.
Big year for the Cowboys with your boy Dak.
Oh, yeah.
Not a lot of people have been watching football according to the ratings, I guess. So you wouldn't be alone in that regard.
Well, I think it's all relative. I'm sure they probably still crush the NBA, just a little fewer than usual.
Probably. Well, you know, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, you know, you just came out with a piece for The Ringer. I think it came up yesterday. 11 surprising things of the NBA season so far. You know, I don't want to talk about that because I want people to go read it. But I wanted to kind of talk a little bit of, like, who's the honorable mention? Like, who didn't make your list?
Well, I would say, like, the main one is just, it was going to be like a group thing, like the Clippers bench, just how well they're playing. I think maybe that's been like maybe the biggest story of the year so far, because how well the Clippers are playing in general and how much against their second unit and how it's going to change their team a little bit. So, I mean, just from top to bottom, I think guys, they're playing so well as a unit together.
Yeah, you know, I think early on in the season, they were their bench unit was like the second best defensive lineup in the NBA. You know, my big concern for them is if that's sustainable. And just along the lines of, like, you're dependent on guys like Jamal Crawford and Mos Bates to kind of carry that defensive intensity in that second unit, you know, that they've had going so far. I'm not sure if that's something that they're going to stay with.
Yeah, it does seem hard to believe a little bit. I don't think anybody saw this coming, at least to the extent of how well they've been playing.
The other thing, too, with the Clippers that kind of concerns me is I wish Doc would stagger the Chris Paul and Blake Griffin a little more. I feel like that's something he hasn't really established. Like, they still start the second quarter and the beginning of the fourth with both those guys on the bench. And I kind of feel like that's something that's going to come back to haunt him still.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've all been saying that for a while. It's definitely a much more old school mentality about your first, second units and kind of the composition of your team. But he's gotten the last laugh so far this season. Like, man, if they're going to play this well, I guess it's okay. But yeah, like, they're pretty much the last team, I feel like, that's got these two defined superstars or their top two or three players, and they play them in concert that much. It seems like most teams in the league these days have really kind of joined that trend of staggering lineups and kind of altering the team, the composition of the team. But the Clippers are kind of like the one outlier, I think. I mean, at the top of my head, I think everybody else pretty much staggers a little more than the Clippers.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think they are the last team, if not one of the last teams, to not do that. So it's interesting to see that, and it'll be interesting down the road. If that second unit struggles, will they continue to do that, or will Doc change course and start to stagger the lineup? Because I personally would like to see a little more of Chris Paul and Mos Bates together. I think in a pick-and-pop situation, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I guess really for them, it's all about the playoffs anyways. And we'll see. Is a 10-man rotation really feasible against the Golden States of the world? It seems unlikely. But yeah, Maybe, like, that's the way to do it, is, like, we're going to try a different way. We're not going to play the same style of basketball you're going to play, because we can't beat you playing that style. But it still seems unlikely that they can play 10 guys against Golden State.
Especially if they have a hard time covering that small ball lineup. When they go small, you know, who's Griffin going to cover? Who's DeAndre Jordan going to cover in those situations? And can they guard those guys, or do they have to go small as well?
I mean, are you going to have to put – okay, the question was, like, could Blake possibly guard KD at all? Is there any way that I could stand up? I mean, he's got the quickness. Not that I'm the length, but maybe – I don't know. Like, I guess if you put Mbah Mute on – you could hide Blake on Iguodala, I guess, and put Mbah Mute on Durant. But that leaves the other side of the floor. No one's going to guard Mbah Mute on Golden State. You're playing 4 and 5. I'd be curious to see Blake guard Durant and see if he could maybe punish Durant the other way, maybe get into foul trouble a little bit. Then Blake has the quickness to guard smaller players, obviously.
Yeah, no, he's definitely capable of it. I think so, at least. And the length is probably the biggest issue, like you touched on. But again, I still think if they're going to play that lineup and stay with a DJ and Blake lineup, they got to figure out who's guarding who. Obviously, DJ is going to guard Draymond Green. And I like your idea of hiding Blake on Iguodala a bit. But it would be great to just – I think if Blake can stay on that lineup, on that floor, they could take advantage of them on the offensive end. You know, and Mbamute shooting close to 40% at this point right now. If that's something that stays through the year, you know, you're going to have to at least pay attention to him. You can't so much sell out and go completely 4-on-5.
Yeah. The thing that worries me, too, is just, I mean, just your backcourt. You're just so much smaller than Golden State. You know, Redick, especially Redick and Thompson. And then you have, like, Curry and Paul. It just feels like they're, like, a smaller, lesser version of that Golden State backcourt. And Klay just going to eat on Redick in post, it seems like.
Yeah. That's going to be their game plan. Just jump right in. And whoever Redick's guarding, they're going to attack in the post. Even if they do pick and rolls and they get the switch, you know, and somehow Redick ends up on Durant, that's an immediate post ISO, right? Like, that's got to happen.
Yeah. I think they might hunt him out, Redick, over the course of that series. That's exactly what you're saying. Because they can just pick and roll every position just about when they're small ball lineup and just hunt out the weakest defender. And I mean, it seems like in general with the Clippers, I feel like the Clippers just having like Paul and Redick, because they're both kind of undersized for their position, and there's not that much versatility with those two guys. Like, you're kind of locked in. I'm going to have Paul on ones, Redick on twos. And in a playoff series, I wonder how much that plays into some of their struggles. It's just a lack of versatility. And Blake and DeAndre, too, a little bit. I mean, like, they're so set, a 1, a 2, a 4, and a 5. There's just so very little flexibility with that.
Yeah, and they've never been able to find that anybody really kind of off the bench. Like, if they're going to talk about going small and playing Austin Rivers, like, that's another guy that's small that's not going to be able to really affect Durant. KD's just going to shoot over him easily every time. It's not a... not really going to be a challenge in that sense. So I'm really
curious. And there's wasted chances with like Reggie Bullock and CJ Wilcox. And maybe they're just not that good because neither one of them has really set the world on fire anywhere else. But like, you just look at those wasted first round picks and it's like the opportunity cost of that. And never really, always going with the vets. I don't know. I mean, it's obviously, it's worked really well for them, but I wonder leaving points on the board just goes back to haunt them in the playoffs.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And I agree with you on at least giving those young guys a chance early on in the season to see what you have. It just feels like Doc never gives the young guys a chance. And I think that's the difference to me between San Antonio and the Clippers. You know, San Antonio will play guys like Jonathan Simmons and find out what they have there. Dwayne Dedmon, who, even though he's out right now, but early on started the season pretty strong. So I feel like that's kind of the big difference, is at least Pop knows what he can get out of those guys come playoff time.
I mean, look at Golden State, too, like Patrick McCaw. Like, there's no way McCaw's playing minutes if he's playing the Clippers. Doc would not play him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's just it goes back to just trusting your young guys. And at the end of the day, sort of finding out what you have in the cupboard. You know, what is in your, who's on your bench? What can they do?
Yeah. And I wonder, too, with the Clippers, like, they've battled this hot start, but like, it's such an advantage having all this continuity in November and December over teams like the Warriors, who they're still figuring out the rotations, finding out the right guys. So I do wonder if that's coming into play for them in a positive way, and whether by the time April, May, and June come around, the league has kind of caught up a bit. Just because they have such an advantage right now, everyone just knows what they're doing. There's not much like, okay, who's going to play here, who's going to play where. They're so set in identity. And I wonder if, like, if they've gotten this huge lead, whether that's really going to hold up by the time the playoffs come around.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's sort of that old adage of you just don't win championships in November and December. And it's not like we haven't seen a hot start from the Clippers before. Although this year is a better team, the 12-13 season under Vinny Del Negro, they started out the season hot the first 2 months of the season. As soon as January hit, everything went downhill after that. And then they had some injuries in the playoffs and ended up losing. But it's not the first time we've seen them start out hot and then the intensity kind of die down a bit. So I won't be surprised to see that if that happens a month from now.
So, I mean, I guess the biggest thing in their advantage is like how the rest of the West is kind of falling back off. Like, you get the Spurs and the Thunder. They've both probably taken steps back. I mean, obviously the Thunder have.
Yeah.
And the Spurs, there's so many moving pieces with them. So maybe they just outlast everybody else, just kept hanging around, and some of their potential challengers have fallen off the pace.
Right, right. Well, who's better? Obviously, we feel the Spurs are have taken kind of a step back, but between the Cavs, Warriors, and Clippers, you know, who are you looking at going, like, they're playing great now, but who's the better team to you? Who's still the team to beat when you're looking at this?
Well, I mean, to me, I don't want to judge too much off November, December anyways. Mm. I feel like it's such a long season. It's such a feeling out process for these elite teams. I'll stick with the Warriors for now. You know, Durant, Steph, Clay, Draymond. That's just a great top four. I mean, I think the Cavs are great. I mean, the top teams are still top teams, but the War, I mean, having Steph and KD on the same team, I want to see how this plays out, but you can never go wrong betting against talent. They've got the most talent in the league by far.
Yeah, that's not even close, you know. And if they could just find a way to get, whether it's JaVale McGee to step up, although it's scary to kind of depend on JaVale, or, you know, finding the right mix of bigs to kind of carry them until they can go to that small ball lineup late in games. That's really going to be the problem for the league. If they find that center that can really carry them out, you know, and play that role of Andrew Bogut to a degree, sort of a rim protector and rebounder.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big question with them. I mean, I think being in Dallas, I kind of figured the Zaza thing wouldn't really work that well, and it's kind of played out that way. Mm. I guess Wes is playing well right now, but I don't really believe in him in the playoff series after what happened last year against Oklahoma City. So, and when push comes to shove, I'd assume they'll blow through Draymond like 30 minutes to five in the playoffs. And having Durant at the four really makes that small ball lineup so much more dangerous than, especially defensively. That's the thing people overlook sometimes. Durant is so much longer than Barnes. He's such an overall better defensive player. It really kind of adds their, because like small ball, you want to have, when you have smaller guys up front, you want to have longer guys in the perimeter to kind of even out. And Durant's like the longest perimeter player in the league, just about.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, standing at, even though he says 6'10 or 6'11, he's 7 feet, if not taller. You know, and if he plays defense the way he defended in that Golden State Oklahoma series last year, like that's a beast. That does add something to the defensive unit. You know, and the way Draymond's been playing, and we all know he's gunning for that Defensive Player of the Year award. I wouldn't be surprised if he kind of just sells out on the defensive end side.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Like, Kawhi's probably the better individual defender, but I could buy Draymond candidacy just from playing him at the five opens up so many things for the rest of their team. Like his ability to play the five at his size, just that's really the key to that team, anyways. So that alone, I think, gives him a pretty solid case for Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And again, it's like you said, we're 1 month into the season. Like, we haven't really seen everything. I mean, who knows what moves are going to happen, what buyout candidates are going to be available, and, you know, and the whole thing come February and March, around that time when the buyout market really juices up. Because I just don't think the Warriors have anybody to really make themselves any assets that are really going to be interesting come trade deadline.
Yeah, it does seem like there's going to be a lot of centers available. Like, there's just so, like, the league has just so many centers, and there's so many teams with multiple centers. It seems like there's going to be somebody on that buyout market, whether it's like Tyson Chandler. Phoenix really has to get younger at that position.
Right.
And here's a name to throw out, and with the way Dallas is playing, if they're this bad all year, what's the point in having Bogut on this team? Right. There really isn't one. And he's a free agent anyways, so.
That's actually a really interesting point. That'd be really crazy if he ends up back at Golden State in March. That's definitely.
I don't know. They'd have to trade him to like a bad team and have him just cut. But they're probably better off if the team's gonna be this bad. Just looking at Mejri and Hammonds, anyways. At a certain point, if they have to pull the plug on the season, and then it's like, well, he's just out there. I mean,
right? He knows the system. It wouldn't be a difficult move for them. And the only question for me is, I wonder if there's any, and I don't know if anybody really knows, if there were any hard feelings from Bogut leaving the Warriors, if he felt like he was just kind of thrown out with the trash, or, you know, or if he kind of sits there and sort of goes like, I understand it. You have a chance at KD. You got to do it.
I mean, it doesn't seem like it. He had an interesting quote the other day where he was talking about how him and Barnes had been like spoiled playing Golden State. And now he's seeing the other side of the league. He goes, yeah, this is how most teams are on the NBA. Yeah, you're here a season, you're gone the next, there's no continuity, things are constantly changing. And that's where the Mavs are right now. And he was like, man, where I was for the last 3 or 4 years, it wasn't like that. It was like, it was so much more stable, it was so much more. I mean, especially when you're winning one game out of every 2 weeks, I think hard feelings go away if you know winning games again.
Right, only two wins after 13 games. You know, should the Mavs kind of just punt the season, just tank, get ready for getting good draft, lottery position, and start sort of selling off prospects and start rebuilding?
I feel like it's like playing the season and tanking would imply there's a choice in the matter.
Right.
For most of the time, it just kind of happens that way. If you look generally, the teams that are really bad have the most injuries, and that's what the Mavs are right now. Their top three point guards are all out, and Dirk is out, so they just can't score. It's brutal to watch. They're actually playing pretty good defense, but they just can't score. And Dirk's 38. I don't know if you tracked it, but like he got hurt his Achilles like the first week of the season. They brought him back a week later, and then immediately flared up again. So how much they would play him, like they can't ask them to do that much. And without Dirk out there, there's no space, there's no shot creation. Their point guards are out. They're going to lose a lot of games regardless of what, you know, the decisions they make at the front office at this point.
Right.
So it's not really a matter of whether the Mavs are going to tank or not. Like, they're just going to lose a lot of games. And that kind of answers its own question.
Yeah. Are they?
Like, who could the Mavs even trade to get a prospect for? I don't see many interesting. I mean, they're just dumping salaries. That's all they could even do at this point.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if they – I don't know how it would work or numbers-wise, but maybe a salary dump of Bogut to, like, Philly for Noel or Okafor or somebody. I don't know how the salaries or numbers would work, but
– Well, I mean, Philly's going to want more than that for one – even in a – I mean, they can still get more than that for one of those guys.
I'm not sure.
At Mavs, to give up, you got to give up something to get something.
Yeah, but I'm not sure there's that much – there's that big of a market for those guys. I mean, Noel, we don't know until he's healthy. He's still out. Okafor, I'm not sure if there's that big of a market for him because it's just sort of the game is kind of not passing by, but he's your big man off the bench. He's Enes Kanter. He's Al Jefferson. He's going to come in, post up, and get you 15 points. I think that's his best case scenario. So I'm not sure there's that big of a market for him.
So you think like Justin Anderson could swing a trade? That'd be enough?
I don't know. I mean, Philly's got such a logjam at that forward position. I know they're in no rush right now with Noel sitting out and everything, but they got so many guys. I mean, you look at it with Embiid, you know, once those minutes restriction comes off, which I don't know if that's something that's going to last all year or not, but, you know, you need to find him more minutes when he's able to play. You got Okafor, Noel, Simmons is going to come back next year, if not this year. You know, you got a lot of guys that are going to want to – that are – splitting up a lot of minutes that you need to start getting rid of those assets, and they need to get some better wings there. So I don't know. I mean, Justin Anderson might be a guy that they could look at and say, that's somebody we could build on that and Bogut, buy out Bogut. I'm not sure. I'm throwing it on the wall and seeing what sticks.
My guess is Noel would move first. I kind of get the feeling he's not going to play for them again. Like whenever he gets healthy, he'll just kind of not, you know what I mean?
Right.
And they'll move off him right away. So by the time this is purely speculation, but
yeah.
My guess is he's played his last game in Philadelphia, especially after what he said at the start of the season.
Start of the season, he was kind of quietly campaigning for a trade, I think, with those comments he made. The one thing is you're probably going to want to do like – he might – if he plays, it's going to be like showcasing him. He's healthy. This is what he can do again. You know, he's a good player, hoping that they can probably get better offers for him. But I think you're right. Like, I don't expect him to finish the season. At least him or Okafor. I don't expect both of those guys to finish. One of those guys is going to finish the season as a Sixer at the end.
Yeah, it is tough because there's so many teams with centers who are looking to get smaller, and there's just so many. Like the market is flooded with them.
I mean,
it's such a flipping on its head from how it used to be.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, you have Greg Monroe and Milwaukee not getting any time. You know, that's somebody that. They're always looking to move, and they haven't been able to find a trade for him. I mean, the center market, and those who think the center position is gone, it's kind of overflowing with talent at this point too. Though, you know, we see Embiid, we got Anthony Davis, Karl Anthony Towns. You know, there's a lot of young talented centers, Porzingis. You know, but the market for the average center is pretty much gone, right?
Yeah, or even like the guys in Denver. They're both above average, but I don't know how many teams are really even looking. I'd love to get the Mavs, one of those, get Jokic or Nokic, but I guess you have to give up. But yeah, that's probably been the other big story of the season so far, is just the young, versatile center kind of moving, flipping the dynamic a little bit, bringing guys, like the bigger players who are playing small. Like there's like five or six of them kind of really asserted themselves this season across the league.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's definitely an interesting seeing the interesting shift in that. What are your thoughts with Phoenix also? Like for me, I think Phoenix has just got to start punting. You kind of mentioned possibly a buyout with Tyson Chandler. I know it's all speculative. It'd be a massive buyout, but what do you think there with Phoenix? I mean, they've rebooted it, I feel like, three times, but keep rebooting to the same plan of let's just get a bunch of guards.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the big question they got to figure out right now is Alex Len. We talked about like the market for average. Is he an average starting center? He's going to hit free agency this offseason as a restricted free agent. He was a top five pick. You kind of got to see what you have in him, especially with Bender and Chris behind him and their kind of young player development pipeline. They spent a big pick on him. Tyson's not helping them win. They don't really need him out there. It seems like they've got to just try Len for a while and see what he can do, because they're clearly not going anywhere this season. It's hard to buy out a guy with so much money on his contract. Probably there's the market for, I don't know. I mean, Portland, maybe a team like that, maybe could use Tyson. The Warriors, I guess, but they have too much money. That's the thing, is because he has such a big contract. But it just feels like for the good of the team, they've got to start trying these young guys out.
Yeah, and I wonder how much Tyson really wants to stay in Phoenix at this point. You know, he signed there with the hopes that they were going to be able to get LaMarcus Aldridge. That didn't pan out, and now he's kind of stuck in this sort of rebuilding thing. And he's a competitor. You know, he wants to win. So I'm not sure he's all that keen on staying there. I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to negotiate a buyout if there's not a trade at the deadline.
Yeah, it's a tough balance. This is his last big contract. So, yeah, he wants to win, but he's got a championship ring. He's had a long career. And this is the contract that's not the rest of his life. How much is he really going to want to give up off that with, what, 2 years left on his deal?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I'm sure he'd like to win, but he has won. And, you know, that third contract, that's like, I've been in the league long enough. I spent my money. Now I got to start thinking about my future, my, you know, my grandkids.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be it's a lot of money to give up. It's $13 million each year. The Portland idea of maybe getting him off to Portland, depending on what the right assets are pretty interesting, though. That could be a good mix because their defense is just struggling right now.
Yeah, they've been kind of – their margin for error was pretty small on defense last year, and it's gone now. It is – it's not – I wouldn't say it's shocking, but they're the worst – I think it's the worst defense in the league. Is that right?
They're definitely in the bottom five, if not the worst. I know for sure. It's hard because their backcourt's not a defensive backcourt. With Lillard and McCollum, none of those guys are really defending. You know, you're right. They have the worst defensive rating according to basketballreference.com. Plumlee's not really that much of a rim protector. They definitely are challenged in that side of the ball.
Yeah, losing Amelia has really hurt them. He was the longest player kind of on their starting unit, their best defender, and they really they weren't very great with him, but without him, they've just plummeted.
Yeah, they really struggle at that point without him. Like he's the guy that really helps them also go small and makes it easier for them. So that's a bit of a challenge for Portland. You know, I got a quick random question for you here. I want to ask you. You know, you had gelato at any time recently? Have you been to any cool gelato places lately?
Not really. That's not a big thing out in Dallas, Texas. There's a gelato shop.
Well, let me just tell you, Jonathan, the next time you come to LA, I want to take you to Uli's Gelateria in downtown. It's in the Spring Arcade. It's phenomenal. You will thank me for going there. It's a great place. Get there, try the sea salt caramel, the speculoos cookies. Those are my two favorite flavors. You can't go wrong.
Well, you know, I guess so. Take your word for it.
There you go. Next time you're in town, I'll try to help you out and point you in that direction. Was there a chance you watched the Laker game last night against Oklahoma City?
I did not see that. I don't even know who won.
Oh, the Lakers did at the buzzer with a Nick Young stealing a loop pass to Lou Williams, drilling a three, and then I think it was Westbrook misses a three at the other end, and the Lakers win. You know, I got to ask you, though, are the Lakers this year's Portland? You know, last year we looked at Portland and they were just like, this team's going to be terrible. They lost Aldridge, they lost Batum, Wesley Matthews, they're going to be garbage. And now, you know, they make the playoffs. Is there any similarities to this Laker team and that Blazer team?
That's really interesting. I hadn't even thought about that, but that's a really interesting question. What jumps out to me just from like a big picture look at them, it's when they're playing Clarkson and Russell together, it feels kind of like Lillard and McCollum a bit. In terms of you have two guards who can shoot three off the dribble, run pick and rolls, kind of play off each other, except they're much taller. They're both 6'5". And then The question with them is kind of like Portland's. Do they have enough defense? Mozgov's probably a better interior defender than Plumlee. I wonder if their wings can hold up. They don't have the same caliber defensive wings. Like, you got Randall and Dang. But Randall's pretty fat. I mean, that's a really interesting question. Like, you should get out in front of that, because that's an interesting theory for sure. They played really well. They've been, like, a lot of it, too, just if you look at Kobe's percentages last year, if you remove that many shots at that poor percentage on the team, there's going to be, like, a dead cat bounce just on the math of it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, last year was such a weird season for those young guys. You know, not just, you know, when Kobe plays, he's going to get to do whatever he wants, but it was, didn't know what nights Kobe was going to play until day of the game, you know, most of the time. So that definitely kind of throws their rhythm off and everything like that. I really think, you know, going into this season, I was like, you know, the Lakers are going to have a 20-25 win season if everything goes well. You know, they're 8-7 right now. If playoffs ended today, and again, it's still early, a lot of time for things to go wrong, but you know, playoffs, if season ended today, they're a 7 seed. You know, I don't think anybody would have penciled them in this early in that. You know?
I mean, to me, it's just going to be about their defense, because they'll be able to score points with Walton's system and the talent they have. It's just kind of like Portland last year. They didn't really have the defensive personnel, but they just kind of scrapped away to being an average defense. If they can just be a league average defense, I think they do have a chance at it. And that's the question. And a lot of it, too, I mean, how many games are they going to win based off being a young LA team no one takes seriously for a while? Like, they always had a few scheduled ones off that alone, off teams hanging out in LA. So that there might be 3 or 4 extra wins. And Portland last year, that home court in Portland was a huge part of their season. They're one of the best home teams in the league.
And if they can build enough equity into that, like if they can get enough wins early in the season, it might be hard for some of these teams that are below them to catch up. It'll be interesting to see how they played out the rest of the year. They're in a tough stretch right now. Besides Oklahoma last night, they got Golden State back-to-back. They have, I know they have Atlanta coming up, and they just played, they just lost to the Spurs last week. So they're in a little bit of a tough stretch with a few tough games here. It'll be interesting to see how they finish the week. Especially because you know Golden State's going to come at them after the whooping they put on them a few weeks ago.
I mean, they're definitely a fun team to watch. They've been one of the big, I guess, most pleasant surprises of the season. Even if they don't make the playoffs, they're just a really fun team to watch. They play a fun style of basketball, and they have a good young core in place long term, for sure.
Yeah, it's a refreshing change of pace from Byron Scott to Luke Walton. You know, we're getting a little more fun. The guys look like they're enjoying it much more than they were last season.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Jonathan, I know college season is just starting up right now. I generally don't watch a ton of college basketball, but I know you've been following it a bit. You know, who are some of the young players that are guys that are going to be playing in the league next year or the year after that NBA fans should start, you know, should poke their head and watch a couple of these games?
Well, I mean, I think you can never go wrong watching Duke and Kentucky. There's probably between those two teams 10 NBA players on those two teams, and at almost every position. I mean, Duke is a team to watch this year. They've got an NBA prospect at every position. Kentucky, as usual, stacked with players. And then you've got like Josh Jackson at Kansas, Markelle Fultz at Washington, Dennis Smith at NC State.
But I would say for your bang for your buck, you can't go wrong with Duke and Kentucky. That's probably going to be, if you can't watch much college basketball this year, I would say try to catch those two teams play a couple times, because there's going to be a lot of talent, a lot of fun back. It's fun to watch these young, like 18-year-olds, these raw guys kind of learning on the fly. Like I would say that's like the 31st and 32nd NBA teams of those two.
Gotcha. Fair enough. Well, I'll make sure I watch a couple of those games and catch. They don't play this year, do they? Kentucky and Duke? Do you know offhand?
No, they don't usually play each other in the regular season. Right. Yeah, Duke will be better to watch because the ACC is just much more competitive than the SEC. So like you'll see Duke play UNC, Louisville, Syracuse. Kentucky's got a fun. They play UCLA, UNC, and Louisville. Those will be three really fun games. See Lonzo Ball versus DeAndre Fox. I mean, yeah, those are three games to watch for Kentucky. And of course, December is those.
Perfect. Well, Jonathan, I really appreciate your time. I know we're coming up on Turkey Day. You know, what are you working on? Is there anything you want to plug or tell the people where they can find you?
Just keep coming to theringer.com. Well, we got a lot of stuff in the works for this NBA and college basketball season. So just keep coming on board.
Great.
Every day. Just give me those clicks.
Jump on, guys. I definitely recommend reading his piece on the 11 surprises of the NBA season and also his breakdown on Domantas Sabonis of Oklahoma City that was up a few days ago. Definitely recommend those two pieces. Those were pretty awesome to read. You guys can find me at thejumpball.net. You can follow me at Twitter at thejumpballnet. And that's about it for us here. Everybody have a great Thanksgiving, and thanks for listening.